Hey, it's you, man, from KC95 here. Good evening and welcome to Toasted Tavern. Your host, Scott Tobin, and the man called Wags are ready to bring you the night in sports. So pull up a stool, grab a drink, and let's get toasted.
And good evening and welcome back into the Toasted Tavern. Yes, not because of the weather, but we have been shuttered for a few weeks as life has hit us hard. I'll put it that way. It has definitely hit us in a spot with the winter rush, bad weather, school, health, so many different things going on. But we are back and better than ever, and we are so glad to have you guys with us tonight as we get back to talking about sports. And before we get to that, though, I got to check in with my boy Scott, because we were talking before the show. We have not been in the same room for 7 months. And we haven't had a chance to really talk to each other in the last couple of weeks either, as some stuff has gone down. But it's good to see you, man. How you feeling? And are you ready for sports to really hit the home stretch here in the winter?
I am, man. I'm feeling pretty good right now. Like you said, it's been a weird couple of weeks. A lot of stuff going on. You know, our crazy weather, for one thing, had everybody pretty much stuck inside as we had another ice apocalypse the last couple of days in the St. Louis area, and it's hitting the Midwest and going to be even bigger as it hits the East Coast in the next couple of days. So everybody that's watching, be safe over the next couple of days. Let's just throw that out there from the beginning. But yeah, it's good to be back, man. I'm ready to talk some sports, and hopefully we get some sports back here pretty soon. I mean, I know hockey and basketball are going, but it's almost spring. We need that spring sport to make a return here new soon.
Yeah, we're going to get to talk about the baseball lockout here in just a second. We're also going to break down where the Blues sit at right now as they get ready to take on the Sabres on Friday night. Trade deadline is looming there. We also have college basketball getting ready to hit the conference tournaments. A couple of teams have a shot at making the big dance and maybe even going on a run. And we're not just talking about the men's side of things either. Women have a couple of opportunities as well. And a little NFL news and notes as well. We have some returning news to talk about and maybe a potential leaving news to talk about as well. But that's a little bit down the line. But we got to start right off the bat and talk about the one, no pun intended, about the biggest story in sports right now. And I would say it's big everywhere, but I don't know if it technically is big everywhere, because it feels like baseball has kind of taken a back seat in the lives of sports fans, essentially. It's still a big, big sport, but I feel like, especially with the lockout that's going on right now, that a lot of people are becoming disinterested in baseball. And it's a shame, because it's such a beautiful sport, and we're lucky enough to have a successful team here in St. Louis. I want to start off by asking you this first off. Regardless of how this plays out, and we'll talk about that in just a second, but regardless of how this plays out, is baseball harmed like it was back in 94 by this lockout, especially if they do end up canceling games?
Not yet. Like you said, right now, no, because we haven't missed any games. You know, we just now be at the start of spring training, basically. So as of right now, no, it's not. I mean, people are frustrated. They don't want to hear about owners and players fighting and arguing over money. But right now, it hasn't really hurt anything. If we get to that Monday deadline that everybody's talking about and they decide to start canceling games, then yeah, it does, because then people are really going to be frustrated. You know, it hurts the diehard baseball fan, people like me, are going to be there no matter what. There's going to be casual fans that are going to get frustrated and say, you know what, when they come back, I'm not going to pay attention, at least at first. You know, I think more often than not, people do that and they go away for a little while. But then you get into the middle of the summer and baseball fans come back. We see it. You know, most of them will come back at some point, but there will be some disinterest at the beginning of the season when they come back if they don't start on time.
Yeah, it's going to be not as detrimental as the 94 strike was. But that, like you said, is only if they don't miss baseball games. Now, if they start canceling regular season games and not making those up, as it seems like that's going to be the case if this does play out the way that some people think it's going to play out, then you start to see that loss of interest in the fans kind of being pushed away from the game of baseball. And I feel like after what we saw in 2020, that's something baseball and the players union cannot allow to happen. You know, we've seen some of this interest wane a little bit, and it all revolves around money. I mean, that's what it comes down to. I mean, you're talking about the biggest issues that these sides remain apart on. It's luxury tax thresholds. It's salary arbitration eligibility. It's revenue sharing and the size of pool money for pre-arbitration players. So it's all about money. and you've got owners crying poor. You've got baseball players saying they're not getting paid enough and they're not getting paid enough soon enough. It all comes down to the money aspect side of things. And, you know, obviously they have arguments on both sides. I feel like the players have a better argument, but I saw a great tweet today that kind of sets me back a little bit on what the players are talking about and the fact that they are in the wrong or the right, whatever you want to put it. But, you know, they're still minor league players are still treated as secondary players. Essentially, they're not under the players union umbrella. And I feel like most major league teams are really going to push the minor league baseball season, especially if games are canceled. And those players don't have as much protection as, you know, the players in the union do. So I still feel like I'm on the side of the players in this, because I do feel like they're the ones that are getting screwed in all of this. But they're not as shiny as I think a lot of people expect the players to be.
Well, here's the thing about minor leaguers getting pushed. You know, I mean, it's such a weird thing because you can't really push minor league baseball, because anybody that's on a 40-man roster, as long as this lockout goes, they can't play in minor league games. So it's not really like you can go, okay, if you're the owner, say, okay, we're really going to push our minor leaguers because you guys are sitting out, because the best of the best minor leaguers in a lot of cases can't play either. You know, the whole thing is stupid. Here's what I'll say. And the reason that, you know, both sides do have a case, but think about it. There's absolutely no reason that we're in a lockout. The owners did this. They could be, and the players have said, you know, we're willing to come back and play. You know, we're willing to go through spring training while we try to iron this out. They could be having spring training right now. Everybody could be at work. Everything could be going, and they could be doing this behind the scenes and trying to figure it out. But the owners didn't want to do that. The owners said, nope, we're not going to let you do that. We're going to lock you out. Nobody's going to do anything. And, you know, it comes back to the fact that when you look at some of the offers that the owners have made in the early parts of this, you can't say that they're negotiating fairly or trying to negotiate fairly. I mean, a couple of their offers have been worse than what was in the last CBA when you break it down with inflation and everything. So, I mean, you know, for the owners to cry poor and for, you know, for Rob Manfred a couple of weeks ago to say, you know, you're in good a shape as to go out and buy a lottery ticket as you are to own a Major League Baseball team. You have the same kind of chances to be a millionaire. I mean, that's the most ridiculous. I mean, people aren't stupid. You know, don't come out and lie to us and say, oh, we're poor. No, you're not. You know, they're not poor. They're not hurting for money. Not any of those 30 owners are hurting for money. That's ridiculous for them to even try to cry poor. You know, because again, when you look at the salaries that players are making, and people can say, oh, it's ridiculous that the salaries these players are making. Whose fault is that? It comes back to the owners again, because if the owners weren't willing to pay Max Scherzer $45 million a year, and they say, okay, we're not doing that, we're giving you 20, is Max going to walk away and say, I'm not playing? No, he's not. He's going to keep playing. If the owners weren't willing to give somebody $400 million, are guys going to quit playing because they're only making $200 million or they're only making $100 million? No, they're not. You know, this is a thing that the owners have created themselves by giving these outrageous contracts that started this whole thing. So, I mean, you have to look at it that way too. I mean, the players are going to play. I mean, the players are going to make good money no matter what, but the way the contracts have gotten completely out of control, and they have to a certain extent, because like literally like 30%, 30 players are making like 80% of Major League Baseball's payroll right now, which just tells you how out of whack things are. You know, you've got guys like Scherzer that owners are paying $45 million a year. And then they're going, okay, well, the rest of our team now, we're going to give you guys like $2 million. You know, we're going to fill it out with $2 million players because we're giving Max $40 million. And that's what the players are crying. That's what the players are complaining about. You know, they're saying, wait a minute, we've got to try to straighten this out and make it more even to where the money's getting to some of these younger players. So the guys are making more than $500,000 compared to $45 million to this guy. So, you know, it just comes down to they've got to sit down and they've got to iron this out. But, you know, a lot of it comes down to the owners, and a lot of it is the owner's own making that's caused the problem.
Well, and the fact that they essentially locked the players out and then only met once over the course of essentially 2 months, and then all of a sudden they go, oh, we really got to get going on this. We're going to impose a deadline of Monday. We've got about a week and a half to nail this down. But when really you had two and a half months to at least have dialogue between the two. You know, if you were saying this stuff was going on in mid-December, and these two sides were as far apart as they are right now, you'd say, okay, all right, they're both at starting points. And then this slow whittle away of adjusting their offers would be like, okay, this is the negotiation. This is how it works. You have time. You're slowly kind of seeing things kind of get closer together. But we're 4 days away from the self-imposed deadline of Monday, and we're still way far apart on a lot of these issues. That's where the worry comes in. And like you said, the owners have essentially done it to themselves, but I think it was because it was calculated. They wanted to put the pressure on the players' union because they want them to cave. This is a huge game of chicken is what it is.
Oh, yeah.
And
absolutely.
Right now the players are going to have to be the ones that blink because they're not going to get paid. Owners are still going to be bringing in money. They, as we've talked many times in this show, the owners, baseball teams are not their only revenue stream. They're still making money. Yes, places like St. Louis and a couple other towns are going to lose money because people aren't going to Ballpark Village and they're not spending money in certain places because they don't have games on there. But these owners are getting revenue from a bunch of different places, so they can afford to not play games for a certain amount of time. Players can afford it, but they really can't afford to lose games. So the owners have essentially put the players over a barrel and said, hey, look, we're coming down to it. We're making some progress. We're trying to meet you guys somewhere. It's not really what they're doing, but they're essentially saying, look, we're going to put it this at such a level that eventually you're just going to have to say, screw it. We're going to accept these terms and get back onto the field. But I don't know if that's going to actually happen this time.
I think it will. And for one thing, players don't have a whole lot of bargaining chips, but they have one big one. And that's like when they were talking about the fact that the owners have set this deadline and said, okay, you know, we don't have an agreement by Monday. We're going to start canceling games and there's no salaries. You know what the players' response to that was? Okay, you do that. We won't agree to expanded playoffs, yep, which is the one thing that the owners need more than anything else because they've already signed that TV agreement with ESPN and with TNT and TBS and MLB Network for those expanded playoff games. So, you know, that's the players' bargaining chip, the big one that they have left, is that they're not going to agree to that. And the other thing, which I absolutely hate, is putting company logos on their uniforms. You know, I know it's probably just going to be a little patch on their sleeve or something, but, you know, I really don't like that idea. But that's the other thing that players have said, you know, you take games away from us, we don't agree to either one of these things that make you guys a boatload of money, which the owners don't want to lose. So I think what we're going to see, and kind of like we talked about before we went on the air, I think you're going to see it be ugly and sound like they're making incremental progress until we get to Saturday night, Sunday morning, probably close to midnight on Sunday night, early Monday morning. And then I think all of a sudden they're going to go, hey, you know what? Let's meet somewhere in the middle. That might be a good idea. And I think that's what's going to happen. And I mean, we see that happen in a lot of negotiating sessions with a lot of ownership and unions, you know, whether it be the car industry or, you know, whatever, different unions. You see that happen all the time. And I think that's what's going to happen here. I think it's going to be that 12th hour, you know, the buzzer's about to ding, the bell's about to ding, time's up, and I think you're going to see them come to an agreement.
Well, the fact that they've met four straight days does show you that they are willing to talk and they're trying to figure this out. And I think once you start to see maybe more than a couple hours every day of them meeting, maybe if they have an overnight meeting where, you know, it's like you said, Saturday night, if they're there late in Florida on Saturday night and that turns into an overnight kind of thing or a really late night kind of meeting, I think that right there will signal that negotiations are getting serious and that they really are trying to find a way to make it work. And, you know, if you don't know, they're down at Roger Dean Stadium where the Cardinals are at. Paul Goldschmidt is down there and he's a part of this. Max Scherzer is also a part of these talks as well. So you've got some St. Louis influence. So it's not like you have just like the heavy hitters in a sense, like the Yankees or the Red Sox, the teams that make a ton of money and are trying to make the decision. You have representation of some of the smaller market and mid-market teams in there as well. And I kind of want to bring this point up, and I want to talk about ads here in a little bit because that's something I have to ask you about. But the first thing we need to talk about, though, is, you know, the luxury tax. And I was listening to the radio the other day about this, and they were talking about how, you know, the luxury tax was implemented to try and increase spending from lower market teams and trying to keep everybody competitive as much as possible. And And I started thinking, I'm like, you know, it has brought teams closer together. We do see more parity in the league right now, but you do have teams, I think four or five teams had spent over the luxury tax last year, and you still had teams at the bottom end of the spectrum not spending nearly enough money to keep their teams competitive. And it almost made me sit back and go, why are the players not pushing for the abolishment of the luxury tax in a sense? Because it's a soft cap is what it is. It is a soft salary cap. And if they really are trying to get as much money as possible, how are we not talking about either having a salary floor that's really higher than it could be and really force teams to spend money, or just the abolishment of the luxury tax in and of itself?
Right. You know, and that's what the players are really pushing for is for a floor, you know, to make teams have to spend a certain amount of money to try to make teams competitive so that, you know, players will stay on teams like young players will stay on teams like the Pirates or the Royals or some of those teams that don't spend a lot of money and try to make them more competitive. The problem that they're running into right now is that they can say that and say, okay, we need a floor because these teams never spend any money and they're not competitive. And then the owners turn around and look at him and go, okay, well, explain to us how the Tampa Bay Rays work then. You know, that's what the owners use as their excuse, or the Oakland A's, you know, when the A's had their runs where they're, you know, so you've got those couple of outlier teams that even though they don't spend any money have been able to stay competitive somehow. I'm not really sure how the Rays have been able to do it, quite honestly, with all the guys that they've lost over the last few years. But, you know, that's the owner's argument is, well, those teams can do it, so why should we spend money? So you've got that argument. You know, the players don't really care about the luxury cap. They're more interested right now in competitive balance and trying to make it more even to where more guys can play on bad teams and get some of that playoff money. And that can be spread out to different guys a little bit. More guys can get into that financial impact of those kinds of things too, make it more fair for everybody, which sounds weird, but that's kind of what the players are pushing for right now.
Well, you know, if everybody's more competitive, more money is there, the expanded playoffs are something that can be implemented, therefore more money is coming in there. So it really comes down to, you know, the more balance and the more important games there are, the more money is starting to come in because more eyes are on the game, therefore more money is available and then can therefore be paid out because you have guys across the country that are playing on teams that are in competition and are really bringing in revenue for Major League Baseball. And that seems to be what it comes down to it comes down to revenue. And the players want more of it. The owners want more of it as well. They don't want to give as much of it away. So it's definitely something that is going to bear watching in the next couple of days. And we're going to be lucky enough to have Dani Wechselman from MLB Network Radio joining us tomorrow at 4:00. She's going to join us and talk a little bit about where things sit as far as the lockout is concerned and the meetings and the negotiations. So she will be with us tomorrow here at 4:00. So make sure you join us then. For that, Dani Wechselman joining us tomorrow. And I want to get to one more thing in this before we move on to another subject. You brought up the ads on jerseys and things of that nature and how you're like, you don't want it at all. I just want to ask you this. How many hockey games have you been able to watch the last couple of months?
I've watched a few. I notice them.
Do you?
I do notice them.
That's what I was wondering because, I mean, I've watched a lot as well. And for me, it's kind of like, I haven't really seen them. Like, I've seen them, but it hasn't been one of those things where it's like, oh my gosh, there's a logo on a helmet. Oh my gosh, there's a logo on a helmet. So I'm curious to see how other people view it as well, because I know you're a purist when it comes to, you know, jerseys and things like that. Jerseys for me are iconic. They really are. I mean, I've got a bunch of them hanging up behind me, especially the Blues ones, and seeing a logo on there for an advertisement, it does kind of go, oh, I don't know. But if it's done strategically in the right way, I think it can work. It is going to be interesting to see how they play it out. But the amount of patches that we see on jerseys now anyway makes me sit there and go, okay, I think I can be okay with it as long as it's done the right way. Like the NHL, in my mind, has done it with the logos on the helmets. If we get full-on Swedish hockey players' jerseys with everything, you know, patches just all over the jersey, that's where things get a little hectic for me.
Yeah, I will say that the NBA has done a better job of it than the NBA. The NBA things are, those thin patches on the NBA uniforms are awful.
I haven't seen
them. They're big and they're gaudy and, you know, some of them just don't make sense. I mean, you know, you see the Bucks and they have a Harley Davidson logo, which makes sense since they're both in Minnesota. That kind of makes sense, but still, to see a Bucks jersey and then have a big black and orange Harley logo on the green Bucks jersey doesn't really look right.
See, that's what it comes down to. I mean, you look at, like I said, the NHL stuff. They've been able to seamlessly blend some of these logos onto helmets that, you know, it may be changing the color font or the color of the logo or something of that effect. I mean, you got the Enterprise logo on the Blues one, so green logo on a blue helmet, but it seems to kind of work. With the Stiefel logo, it's just a white logo, so it works. That's where it's going to come down to, though. You look at, for me, I'm a big, you know, obviously a big Premier League viewer, and I'm a big Man U fan. You know, for me, Man U is, their jersey is symbolized by the fact that they have a logo front and center on their jersey, and then they have a patch for their logo. It works for me because that's what I've been used to. So if that were to be what the NHL does, it'll take some getting used to. But the Man U jersey for me is iconic. The Manchester City jersey is iconic. All these jerseys are iconic, and they're iconic because they do have logos on there. So that's where it's going to get a little tricky for me, is where they kind of put things on there, especially for baseball. But I'm willing to see and see if it works before I start to get all gung ho. And I know you're kind of the same way. You're I don't want it, but I think if it's done right, you can at least get by with it.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's going to depend on where they put it. Like, I don't want a big patch right above the head of one of the birds on the bat on the Cardinal jersey. You know, it's got to be on the sleeve. And hopefully with St. Louis and with their connections and with Busch Stadium, hopefully if the Cardinals do it, hopefully it will be a Budweiser sponsorship on the card. And that would go over better in St. Louis if it's some kind of little Budweiser logo on their sleeve or something. But, you know, if you start going big patches on their chest above the team logo, no, I'm not going to like it. I mean, if you could put something small on the back of a batting helmet or something like that, then, you know, that you're still going to see when they're at the plate from that back camera, you know, the home plate camera that's behind them that calls for balls and strikes. Something like that I could live with. I just don't want the big gaudy things because, like I said, the NBA things are pretty bad. I mean, some of them, it's like, wait a minute, that's the most god-awful thing I've ever seen. You know, it's just they're big and gaudy and right in the middle of their uniforms.
And that's crazy considering the NBA has done so many of the right things here the last couple of years in a lot of different avenues, that for that to be the thing that they like totally mess up on is a little out of character for them, because their social media presence, everything they're doing in the communities and all that, everything seems to have been going right for the NBA. And all of a sudden it's like, wow, they've done a horrible job with advertising on jerseys.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, my argument with baseball is, you know, I mean, I know it's a moneymaker and so the owners are going to do everything. But, you know, baseball is different than hockey or basketball where you don't have a whole lot of signage in the arena. I mean, look at all the signage you've got already at Busch Stadium. Is that enough? Not enough advertising money that you have to put logos on the jerseys now, too? And, I mean, I know it's not just the Cardinals. It's a baseball thing because you've got teams that don't make nearly as much money or draw fans that they need to do it there for them. But, yeah, it's just, like you said, I'm a purist. I just don't. Baseball jerseys, and baseball jerseys are kind of more iconic than any other sports jersey when you really think about it. I mean, you think about the most iconic sports jerseys, what does everybody normally talk about? They talk about the Yankees, they talk about the Yankees, they talk about the Cardinals, they talk about the Dodgers, you know, and so, you know, it's just different than other sports in that way too.
Yeah, I mean, baseball has been around a lot longer than most of these sports. When you think about NFL uniforms, it's not so much the uniform itself, it's the logo and the helmet, so there's that in that aspect. You know, the NHL is, I mean, hockey sweaters are iconic in and of themselves, but because it's such a niche sport, it's not as widely known. So, yeah, when it comes down to baseball, it's the jersey and the logo on the jersey that people talk about for sure.
Yeah, let's just hope that if baseball does this, let's hope the logos that they put on there don't look as bad as the Los Angeles Rams name tags that they have on their jerseys that look like they bought it at the clearance rack at Walmart from Stan Kroenke.
That was highly embarrassing. And let's touch on the NFL real quick, because we didn't get a chance to talk post Super Bowl because of everything that had gone on, and we don't have to talk about our reactions to who won. We already know all that. We've talked about that in the past. I just want to get your quick reaction, because we posted this a couple weeks ago when they had their parade. But what was your reaction to the Super Bowl parade that LA had as compared to not only the one that was had in St. Louis, but really any other championship parades ever in the history of championship parades. That was pathetic.
Oh, it was. It was absolutely embarrassing. I mean, it just proves that the Rams have no actual fan base in Los Angeles. You know, it's hilarious. And I don't know if we got a chance to talk about it a couple of weeks ago, but did you see the article that the L.A. Writer wrote about how the fact that they didn't have any fans in L.A. was St. Louis's fault because they were a transit team from St. Louis and nobody in L.A. really considers them theirs? It's like, well, you idiot. They're a transit team because they were yours in the first place. You didn't support them then. They came here. We did. And then you stole them away from us. You know, yeah, it was embarrassing. And we talked about it. We posted it. I was at that Super Bowl parade in St. Louis in February. You can see the pictures on our page if you go back and look. But there was snow on the ground. It was like 20 degrees. The player's plane was late coming into town that day. So, I mean, everybody was outside for hours waiting for them to get there. And, I mean, the streets, Market Street was absolutely packed all the way downtown. And then you look at that Rams thing, like you said, and there's, what, maybe 400 or 500 people there? It's pretty sad. The NFL should be embarrassed.
I think they rightly are. I think they are, and it's quietly in the back of their minds going, wow, we got a lot of money. And you know what? We got a lot of money. We don't care. That's really what the NFL's thinking right now. They don't care about it. They really don't, because they're making their money hand over fist, and that's all that matters. They're selling jerseys. They're selling TV subscriptions and contracts and all that kind of stuff. The NFL doesn't care they don't care about the fans. They really don't. And honestly, I don't even know if they care about the players. But that being said, training camp rolls around. Guess who's going to be back into the NFL mode again? That'll be you and I. We love the game so much that we can get past the crookedness of the NFL and really just go support the players themselves when it comes to the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like you said, the NFL, there's going to be all kinds of NFL news here. The NFL new year starts here pretty soon. You know, I think we're, 2 weeks away from the combine and 3 weeks away from free agency and, you know, 5 weeks away from the draft. So, you know, the NFL will be all over the news again here before we know it. And there's going to be some big moves, I think, in the NFL. I don't know how much we want to talk about this right now, but I saw a report that there's at least four teams that have offers out for Aaron Rodgers right now to the Packers. It sounds like there's at least four or five teams that have offers out to the Texans for Deshaun Watson because they seem to think that his legal issues were going to be resolved by the 1st of April. There's some talk that Russell Wilson could still be on the move. I mean, I know these are the same guys that we talked about all offseason last year, but you know, those three guys are going to be interesting, and then it's going to be interesting to see where guys like, you know, there were some rumors today that the Steelers may be looking at Derek Carr from the Raiders, which would be interesting. Mitch Trubisky's name has popped up in a couple of places. I saw today that the leading candidate right now to be Tom Brady's replacement in Tampa Bay, Fitzmagic, baby, Ryan Fitzpatrick strikes again, possibly in Tampa.
That would be absolutely amazing. That guy is a journeyman, and I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up there because right now Blaine Gabbert is the guy in Tampa. But, you know, the one guy that you're not talking about, and I don't think it's going to end up happening, but you also have to kind of keep an eye on the Kyler Murray market as well because everything that went down there on social media and everything that went through the media itself, I don't think that the relationship is irreparably damaged. But it is something to bear watching. And with the draft coming up and quarterbacks on the move, the right deal comes along, Kyler Murray could be on the move as well. So we'll definitely talk about that as we get closer to, you know, the combine, the draft, and free agency opening up. But it is going to be an interesting offseason in the NFL. And that's not just in the player market. You know, you talk about Troy Aikman potentially moving to Monday Night Football, breaking up the tandem of Buck and Aikman. That could be a really interesting plot line as well. Might be a job opening there with Joe Buck. Somebody may have to apply for it, Scott. Just saying.
Right? Yeah, the NFL broadcasting market could totally be changed because, you know, by all accounts, Al Michaels was supposed to go to Amazon and be the new Thursday night guy. Now there's a lot of reports that if Troy Aikman goes to ESPN, that Al Michaels is going to go back to ESPN, well, go to ESPN, and go back to his old job on Monday Night Football. And it would be Michaels and Aikman doing Monday Night Football on ESPN instead of them going to Amazon, which was what everybody was kind of assuming was going to happen last week. So that'll be really interesting to watch and see how it plays out. And then who fills those spots? Yeah, definitely. We need to start filling out applications and sending them in, man. It'll be interesting. But yeah, it looks like the TV voices of the NFL are going to be completely different next year when we tune in September.
That is true, so definitely bear watching there. All right, let's jump to the NHL real quick. Blues are in action tomorrow night against the Buffalo Sabres at home. Blues are on a five-game point streak. 4-0-1 in their last five games. Their only loss coming in overtime to the now red-hot Montreal Canadiens, who are trying to pull the Blues 2019 out of their hats, going from absolute last place to a potential playoff spot. Martin St. Louis is their head coach now, and he's done wonders for Montreal. We'll see how that plays out. But Blues are relatively hot right now. They sit in second place in the Central with 66 points. Now, Minnesota is in Toronto tonight. They trail the Blues by 1 point. So that's something that could flip-flop by the end of the evening tonight. Jordan Binnington, he got right against Philadelphia. They were back there for the first time since that 2019 game where Binnington got his first start. He got his first shutout and kind of propelled that team onto their Stanley Cup run. He's not been good this year, and he's definitely struggled in his last five, six games. He only has two wins in his last six games, gave up a ton of goals in those losses. I believe it was somewhere in the range of about 16, 17 goals in those three losses. But he's only given up two goals in the two wins that he's had. So, you know, he got right against Philadelphia. It looked really, really good, but Philly's a terrible team. Is Jordan Binnington going to be okay the rest of the year, or do the Blues have to look at Ville Husso as the guy going forward?
I mean, I think Husso's earned that spot right now. I think, you know, I think he's going to play the majority of the games. You know, I think you probably play him three games to Binnington's two, you know, every five games, kind of do it that way. You know, like you said, Binnington looked better. He looked pretty good against Philly the other night. Am I ready to say that he's back? No, because you know me, I don't one game and I'm not like, oh, look at that. He's back, or oh, he's bad, bench him. I think you got to give it time and see how it plays out. Because like you said, it's not a small sample size at this point that Jordan Binnington was bad. It's not like he had one or two games that haven't been great. I mean, he hasn't really been great since the bubble, honestly. I mean, he's had stretches where he's played well, but he's not been really, really good in a long time. And so I think you just have to wait and see. Kind of, like I said, I think Husso's kind of earned that spot for right now. Play the majority of the game, still get Binnington out there, get him plenty of time. Because, you know, the best thing that could happen is if you have two really hot goalies going into the postseason. But I think right now, unless Husso really struggles, I think he's your number one and Binnington's your number two. And you just kind of ride it like that. You know, like I said, I'm not going to go way overboard. And, you know, I'm not like our fellow co-host, former co-host, who won game and he was ready to pronounce somebody the next superstar or get rid of him. So, yeah, I think we just ride it and see how it goes. Hopefully we see some more good games from Jordan Binnington. And hopefully Husso continues his good play. And that would be the best case situation for this team, is if he could go into the postseason and both goalies are playing well.
And you need to have both goalies playing well because you need to continue to collect points as much as you possibly can. Like I said, the Wild just 1 point behind us. Nashville, 3 points behind us. The Blues do have some games in hand on both of those teams. But they're all chasing Colorado, who's really kind of blown open the Central. I don't know if anybody's actually going to catch Colorado in this instance, but you really want to make sure you collect as many points as you can to put yourself into that second seed potential and have that home ice advantage because I'm starting to come around on the fans having an impact. And I think that game against Montreal really showed that for me is, you know, we saw the Blues struggle in the bubble when there were no fans. We saw the Blues struggle when there were no fans in St. Louis that following season. And you could tell that they could not get up for that game against Montreal when there were no fans in there as well. And it really is one of those things that you need a packed arena for this team to really be high level. And if they can't get that home ice advantage, I'd be a little worried because Minnesota's a very, very good team. They're one of the sneaky good teams this year. And, you know, if they can get strong goaltending from guys like Kaapo Kähkönen, they could be a dangerous out in that first round. And the Blues need to have home ice for that series if that's who they end up playing.
You know what? I'm going to be optimistic about the Blues, which I'm not always when we do this. I know. I see your facial expression. You know what? I feel pretty confident about this team heading into the playoffs because they've played well against good teams. Their biggest problem is we've seen them play down to competition. When they play bad teams, they just don't seem to be able to get up for those games. So I feel pretty – they get into the postseason, I feel pretty good about their playoff chances because I think you'll see them rise. It's just you've got to figure out a way to not let your play slip when you're playing those inferior teams like we've seen happen when they've played in New Jersey or they've played in Montreal where they just have not played as clean or crisp of games as we see against the Colorado or a Vegas or some of those guys.
Yeah, and right now it's very imperative that they collect those points, and it's also imperative that they find out what kind of team they want to have going forward because that trade deadline is approaching here, coming up at the end of March. And if there is a spot where the Blues have struggled this year, it is on the defensive side of things. Their defense has not been great, which is surprising considering, you know, Justin Falk is having one of the best seasons a Blues defenseman has had overall in a long time. Maybe not necessarily point-wise, although he did have a six-game point streak last week. You got other opportunities. You know, Parayko has been hurt last year. He's still trying to round into form. Marco Scandella has dropped off immensely. You've seen the emergence kind of Jake Walman here the last couple of weeks. Scott Perunovic is injured and probably will not play the rest of this season, which is okay. I think they need to make sure that they work him back as slowly as possible. But that's where the Blues are going to have to look as far as the trade market is concerned, is that defensive side of things, especially if you get both these goaltenders really rolling in Husso and Binnington. And a couple of guys that are targets are, you know, Mark Giordano and Ben Chiarot. Now, I'll say this. Mark Giordano was one of those guys that I was looking at the last couple of years as being a potential fit for the Blues. And he's up in Seattle, and we know Seattle's not been great this year. But it's going to probably take a lot to bring him in, and I just don't see the Blues paying that price. And I think, honestly, the price for Chiarot is also very high as well. And, you know, Chiarot is kind of like a guy like Ryan O'Reilly, very, very poor plus-minus because he's playing on very bad teams. And a guy that gets into the system might be able to up his game a little bit. But unless these prices for these guys come down, I just don't see how Doug Armstrong can theoretically make a move. Now, we've seen Doug do a bunch of amazing things here in the trade market, but I think maybe this year might be that time where he may have met his financial match.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Like you said, the prices appear to be really high on those guys. I think they find a way to make some kind of a move. I mean, I think they have to find a defenseman of some kind, even if it's a third or fourth line guy, just to bring some more depth to your defense. But like you said, how they go do that and where they come from is going to be really interesting to see. You got any ideas? Anybody out there that you would say, there's a guy that maybe isn't going to cost you so much?
Not really. I mean, I don't. I almost feel like they're going to have to kind of roll the dice with what they've got. Like I said, I've really liked what I've seen from Jake Walman, especially the other night. He had a bunch of opportunities to the net. Not a ton of them got on the net, but I think he's really shown that he has got the ability to play at this level. Once again, it's going to have to take trading away somebody that to free up not just the cap space, but to be able to bring in some of these top guys, and maybe not even a top guy. It may take them trading a mid-level player just to get a third or fourth, or not fourth pairing, a defensive pairing, but a third pairing defender. You may have to give up a mid-level guy, and I don't know if they want to mess with that chemistry so much because they've had a lot. Now that they're healthy, you're starting to see some of these lines really gel, and I don't know if you really want to disrupt that. And they just, you know, they just re-signed Logan Brown and Toropchenko to extensions for next season. I'm not necessarily saying that those guys are untouchable and that they wouldn't trade them, but I don't see them being guys that they trade. I don't know if Tarasenko is a guy that is going to be moved, especially with this team being in contention and him playing well. I haven't heard very much as far as him voicing an opinion to be moved out, and I do know his trade request is still out there, but I don't see the Blues moving him. And the question I have is really, who are you comfortable with moving out right now?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I mean, it would be a tough decision to move somebody out. So I kind of agree with you. I don't know where they go there. I'm going to kind of flip the discussion on you just a little bit. Jordan Kyrou, any concern on your part, the fact that he's struggled since the All-Star break? Do you think the fact that he went to the All-Star Weekend and was kind of the media darling, was kind of the, you know, one of the fastest skater, everybody's talking about Jordan Kyrou, is that going to his head a little bit? And his game's kind of slipped. He's not been the same player since he's come back from that All-Star break.
Yeah, I mean, there is a bit of concern there. And, you know, he is playing in more games than he's ever played in before in previous seasons. But I saw a picture today, and that picture today made me go, okay, Kyrou's going to be fine. At practice today, Craig Berube, one-on-one with Jordan Kyrou after practice. Every single time that Craig Berube has pulled a player aside for a one-on-one after practice, they've gotten themselves right. And I feel like that's what he does. He's, you know, when he starts to see a guy struggle, when he starts to see a guy try and get bigger than what he is, bigger than the team itself. And I'm not saying Jordan Kyrou has a big head on his shoulder and feels like he is bigger than the team, but when you do have that kind of presence where you have the NHL looking at you, the world kind of looking at you, you kind of go, okay, I'm doing something right. And then you start to force things a little bit. And I think the conversation that was had today was more about, hey, dude, just play your game, do what you've done all year. Your work ethic is there. Your vision is there. Your speed is there. We're going to continue to condition you to be better and able to get through the rest of the season, but just do what you were doing, man. You don't have to get any bigger than that. And you've seen it's been successful. So that conversation was had today. And I feel comfortable that Jordan Kyrou is going to rebound, and he's got some games coming up where he can do that. You know, Buffalo is a team that he can really take advantage of, and I expect to see big things from him going forward the rest of this year. And really, it's just because of that conversation with him and Craig Berube today. The success has been there in those conversations, and I think now that that's been had, you're going to see Kyrou kind of relax a little bit and get back to what he was doing.
Yeah. And like we talked about, you know, being that young and getting that first taste of kind of the media spotlight and everything kind of shining on him, you can't help but, you know, that kind of take that in and kind of being distracted when you're a 22, 23-year-old kid. It happens for the first time. Real quick, a defenseman's name that just popped into my head. What do you think about bringing in a big, giant, like, 8-foot monster? I know he's a little bit old, but what about bringing in Zdeno Chara?
Wow. That would be interesting. If they could make it work, all of a sudden, if they make that work, all of a sudden, the two guys that terrorized you in the 2019 Stanley Cup Finals are going to be on your blue line in Chara and Krug. Once again, it comes down, I like the veteran leadership there. I think they have a lot of veteran leadership in Krug and in Falk right now. But if they get Chara for the right amount, I don't see how that is an issue. He is older. He did just tie the record, I think, for most games played by a defenseman in NHL history the other day. If he's fine taking that step, that step back in a role where maybe he doesn't play every night and it can work, that would be an intriguing player for sure in my mind. Now, I'll throw one back at you real quick. This isn't a defenseman, but one guy that I'm a little worried about, and because he has had such great success here the last couple of years, David Perron, one goal in his last 15 games, just 4 points in that span as well. Has he lost his edge in St. Louis? And is that one of those things where maybe you don't want to do it, but does he get floated out there as a guy that maybe could rejuvenate himself with another team?
That's an interesting question. You know, you have to wonder how healthy David Perron is, because, you know, it kind of all goes back to about the time he had that concussion, because he got off to a pretty good start this year, and then things have kind of gone downhill, and we know his history with concussions. That's an interesting thing, because, you know, going into the season, first part of the season, you thought for sure they would bring him back and sign him to an extension. You know, maybe that is somebody that now you kind of look at and say, okay, you know, we've got all of these other guys that can score and kind of fill that role, and, you know, maybe we do move on from David and see what happens. And I mean, you know, if you do move on from David Perron, let's face it, he'll be back next year, because he always comes back. You can't get rid of him.
That's true, but he does have good chemistry with who he's playing with right now, and that's one of the things that I look at and go, I don't know if I want to mess with that chemistry. And like you said, he is dealing with the after effects of another concussion, so maybe it is just taking a little while for him to kind of get back into form. So I don't see them moving him. I don't see a team taking him per se, but I wouldn't be shocked if he's a guy that maybe does get a little bit of kick the tires and say, hey, we're going to put your name out there. Maybe that lights a fire under them and kind of go from there. So we'll see how that plays out. Trade deadline coming up at the end of March. We'll see where the Blues go. They've got a lot of big-time games coming up here very, very soon. But that all starts tomorrow, home against the Buffalo Sabres. And leading scorer, Tage Thompson, the guy that was the centerpiece of the Ryan O'Reilly trade, the only guy left from that O'Reilly trade in Buffalo, essentially. So it'll be interesting to see him back here in St. Louis as well. All right, college basketball time. Actually, hang on. One thing. We did get a comment in the chat about our NFL talk real quick. We didn't mention his name, but Chris Collinsworth. Do you see him leaving NBC at all?
I think he'll probably stay at NBC. I think he's got a pretty good job there. I'm not the biggest Collinsworth fan, but I think he will probably stay at NBC. I think he's got a pretty good gig there.
Okay, cool. And I think his son works there now as well. So
he does.
The fact that you get a chance to work with your son is another thing. So, all right, college basketball. We've got some highs, we've got some lows, we got some maybes coming up in the world of college basketball. Conference tournaments getting ready to get underway here in the next couple of weeks. Let's start with the good. How about that? Let's start with the good. Talk about Illinois. Illinois, 19-7 on the year. They're 12-4 in the Big Ten. They are facing Ohio State tonight. They're ranked number 22 in the league. And then they have Michigan. They're in Michigan on Sunday afternoon. Illinois right now is a third seed projected in the big dance. They are playing well. 3-2 in their last five. They've beaten Indiana, Northwestern, and number 19 Michigan State. But they did fall to number 3 Purdue. And they fell at Rutgers last week. Is Illinois the best chance that the local area has for a championship? And if so, do they have a legitimate chance at making a run and maybe making it to the NCAA finals?
Yeah, I think they probably have the best chance locally to make a run. Do they have a chance to make it to the finals? Probably. You know, they're not as strong as they were last year, obviously. You know, they've lost a little bit. Still a good ball club. You know, you get into the tournament and make a little bit of a run. You know, I could see them getting to the Final Four, getting into that position. I mean, it won't be easy. There are some good teams, but they've got a chance.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, obviously, they're the only team that is essentially guaranteed a spot in the Big Dance right now anyway. So they do have the best chance of getting in there. And they've beaten some big teams. They've already beaten Ohio State once this year. They have, you know, they've struggled at times, but they have shown that they can put big time games together. They won without Kofi Cockburn a couple of weeks ago in a big time matchup as well. So they've shown that they can win in adverse conditions without their best players playing. So I do think Illinois has a great shot at making a run in the tournament. It is about seeding and who you get placed with. So once the projections are not projections and officially the bracket is out, we'll see how that plays out. And see if Illinois does have a chance to go on a run. They are a really good team. They really, really are. And I'm very interested to see how that plays out. Now, another team that could potentially get into the NCAA tournament is St. Louis. They are 19-9 this year. They're 10-5 in the A-10. They sit fifth right now. They've been struggling as of late, 2-3 in their last five. Two losses to the Bonnies of St. Bonaventure. Where they really struggled. They did not look good in either of those games. But outside of that, they have had success the last basically month and a half. They host Richmond tomorrow night. It's a team that they need to beat. The Spiders trail SLU by just one game in that A-10 conference. And really, SLU needs to get a good seed when it comes to the A-10 tournament because, in my mind, it's conference tournament victory, or they're not in the conference tournament or in the big dance at all.
No, I think you're probably right. I think it's probably a one team conference this year. And you know, if I had to make a prediction right now, I would say that conference championship game is probably going to be SLU and Davidson.
Yeah,
I think they're the two best teams, most talented teams in the conference. I know SLU, like you said, had those couple of games against St. Bonaventure where they didn't play well, and then the Davidson game, and last week it was like they just didn't show up. I don't know what happened that game. They weren't playing defense. It just looked like they were worn out. But I think they can get in the tournament. I think they can win the A-10 tournament. I really do. And then I think they can make some noise in the Big Dance. I mean, they're the number one scoring team in the A-10. They're number one rebounding team in the A-10. They've got a lot of things going in their favor. You know, you wish they hadn't had the big injury before the season started because I think they'd be absolutely dominant this year. I think they can definitely make some noise. I think they can win the A-10. And then I think that, like I said, I think they can make a little bit of a run in the big dance if they get in.
It just feels like it was like a couple years ago where it was going to take an A-10 title for them to get in, and then they went on a big run in that conference tournament to win it. It feels like that same sort of feel this year where they're poised to really run through that tournament and make it into the big dance, and they could make some noise because, like you said, they lead the A-10 in a lot of categories, but they're also led by Yuri Collins. 8.1 assists per game, 2 steals, 11.4 points per game. He's second on the team in scoring. He's a guy that is wildly underrated in the NCAA. He's a guy that essentially got left off the list of top point guards in the country, and yet he's one of the best point guards in the country, and no one's talking about him. So, you know, they get into the tournament, Yuri Collins could have a big-time stage where people finally realize how good he actually is.
Yeah, that's what he needs. You know, when the national media, the national fan base gets their eyes on him, they'll realize that he is one of the best point guards in college basketball. I mean, he's an old-school point guard. He looks to assist, looks for the assist, looks to get his teammates involved more than he looks to score, which, you know, a lot of point guards don't do that anymore. So he's kind of a throwback, kind of an old-school guy, and he's very good at it. And so I think if the national media, if the national fan base sees him, they'll realize how good he is, and he'll get some of that credit he deserves.
I agree. All right, now we got to talk about the bad. And
no,
that's
we don't.
Mizzou.
We don't.
Well, we're going to talk about the bad at Mizzou, but we're also going to talk about the good at Mizzou because there is some good at Mizzou as well. So first off, the men's team, not great. 10-18, 4-11, 12th in the SEC. They're on a 4-game losing streak. They go and play LSU on Saturday night. There's really not much else you can say about this team, just aside from the fact that they're just not good. And a lot of that's because they have a rotation of players every single year because for some reason they just cannot keep players in Mizzou. And I don't know if that's Coach Martin's fault or it's not. It just feels like there's something off there in that men's program. And it's going to be real interesting to see once this season wraps up what direction that they go. I mean, I think Konzo's going to be there another year, but I think, honestly, that they're really looking hard at who the next guy is at Mizzou, and the choices are limited right now.
Yeah, I mean, Konzo's going to be back next year. You're paying him too much money not to bring him back. Plus, that team, I hate to say this, but that team is probably going to be worse next year because there's really nobody coming into the program. You're losing some people. So do you really want to bring in a new coach and have him win 4 or 5 games his first year and then have to totally start from scratch? I mean, you're going to have to start from scratch basically anyway, but do you want it to be like that? You know, we've talked about this multiple times. I think the guy's got to be Kim English. I think you have to let Konzo play out this contract, and then, you know, this time next year, you have to be banging on Kim English's door going, okay, how much money is it going to take to get you to come back to your alma mater, which we all know that he has a lot of love and respect for Mizzou and Columbia and the St. Louis area and Missouri. And so, you know, I think that has to be the play because I think he's the guy that you've got to bring in that's got those Mizzou ties that can maybe bring this thing back to some of that tradition that we all remember and miss in Mizzou men's basketball.
And young, fresh, kind of in the moment, kind of hire would be that. And like you said, he was very close to Norm Stewart as well. So having that old school flair kind of come back as well would be a really, really good thing for that program. On the flip side, we will talk about the good, the women's team. Okay, the women's team, yes, they're 6-8 in the SEC, but they're 17-10 overall. They took down number one South Carolina earlier this year. They're projected to get into the tournament. Right now they're a 10 seed, and they're hosting Kentucky tonight, and they wrap up the season on Saturday in Florida, number 15 Florida, so a chance to potentially have another big upset win as well this year. The Mizzou women's team has been good. It's criminally underrated, essentially. They have not gotten the attention that they probably deserve. And they're a team that's gotten into the tournament over the last couple of years and have made a little bit of noise in that tournament as well. I'm very interested to see how this plays out, see how they play in the SEC tournament as well, and see what they can do because I think they need to be looked at a little bit harder, especially with the struggles of the men's program.
Yeah, I agree. And to say that they haven't gotten the credit that they deserve, they may be the only team in sports history that beat the number one team in the country and actually fall spots in the rankings after they do it. I mean, how does that happen? But it just goes to your point that they're not really looked at or given the consideration they deserve.
Yeah, it's bad. And that's kind of on us as well, because we don't talk about them enough as it is. So media, us included, get out there and talk about Mizzou women's basketball, because it's good. And talk about more women's sports in general. I mean, come on. They're there and they're good. One final thing before we get out of here, and this is a one that's kind of big for me in a sense, because, you know, I go to Lindenwood, and the big announcement yesterday was that they are transitioning to Division One starting next year. They're joining the Ohio Valley Conference, so a very good conference where SEMO, SIUE are residing as well, so still going to have some local rivalries and competitions as well. MLB Network's Greg Amsinger, who is a Lindenwood alum, was there yesterday to make the announcement, along with other alums like Randy Carricker there as well. So Lindenwood has a very good history with broadcast. Dan McLaughlin, Bob Ramsey, all guys that went to Lindenwood and graduated as well. And now that they're moving to Division One, that gives St. Louis area, the St. Louis area, the first Division One college football team in the area, in the St. Louis region. Okay. Now, yes, you have SIUE over in the Illinois side of things. You got Mizzou down south, but SLU is local, does not have a football team. Lindenwood is going to be the first Division One football team in the St. Louis area. That's a huge, huge deal for the city of St. Charles and in the surrounding areas. I'm excited for it because I going there, I might get a chance to call some Division One sports. I'm already doing that with the men's volleyball team, but like, you could potentially have a bunch of really big-time Division One schools coming to the St. Charles area and going to Lindenwood. It's exciting, and I can't wait to see how it plays out. I know you've had a chance to call some games at Lindenwood as well. This is a big, big deal.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like you said, you know, first Division One football team in St. Louis, which is cool. And for that area, and just for the school itself, it's huge. It's going to bring in a lot of money to the school. It's going to bring in a lot of money to the St. Charles area, which is already a booming area. It's good for the St. Louis region in general. Just going to bring a lot more money there, a lot more notoriety there as you get big teams that come in. And hopefully, the thing you got to hope for is that Lindenwood doesn't start off in Division One and is not that blood donor team that everybody wants to play the first 5 or 6 years because, you know, ooh, my aunt, here comes Ohio State to play Lindenwood, you know, because we're going to beat them 85-3 or something, you know. But, you know, they're going to take their lumps, definitely, for the first few years. But, you know, they're going to do some additions to the football stadium. They're going to do some renovations to the basketball stadium to make them more Division One ready. And I think they officially become, like, full-fledged Division One in 2026. Is that what it is, 25 or 26?
It's 4 years. So they're going to compete in Division One in the Ohio Valley Conference beginning next year, next semester, essentially. They can vie for conference championships in that time frame, but they cannot enter NCAA playoff rounds for 4 years. So, so we're in 2022. So 2026 probably would be the time that they are able to compete in at the NCAA championship level. But once again, that gives you the 4 years to kind of take your lumps, figure out your program, see how things are going. Now, this is something that I didn't even think about, and it is an interesting question per se. I had a Lindenwood rugby player come into work today, and we were talking a little bit about this. And, you know, a lot of these athletes that are there right now came in to play Division II. You know, they came in to play Division II sports, succeed at that level in a conference, the GLBC, where they can compete. Now you're moving to Division I, and you're going to have to start bringing in higher caliber athletes, essentially. You know, what does that do to the already tenured scholarship athletes, the guys that are in their freshman, sophomore years, the guys and girls that are in the freshman and sophomore years, you know, are they going to be regulated to being on the bench essentially and not getting a chance to play Division One, or do they take their lumps with the guys and girls that they have now and then start to recruit past that? That's going to be a real interesting play to see how they handle that and how they honor the people that have essentially gotten them to this step.
I think that's what they'll do. I think they'll kind of play with those guys, kind of play that out, and then try to build as they turn into juniors and seniors, try to build, you know, in that four-year window, start to bring in more of those Division One kids, try to recruit that kind of talent. Because, you know, it's going to take a while before you're able to recruit good Division One athletes to Lindenwood anyway. I mean, just because, you know, they're going to realize that, hey, we're going to go there and we're going to be kind of blood donors. So you're not gonna get those cream of the crop athletes for a little while anyway. So I think you stay with what you've got. Like you said, that has helped you get to this point, and then you try to build on it as they advance in their athletic careers and in their academic careers the next few years.
Well, I'll tell you, the guy that set this whole thing in motion, I think, it was Pierre Desir when he came into Lindenwood and he eventually got drafted into the NFL. I know that probably wasn't the linchpin moment, but for me, when that happened, I was like, holy cow, people recognize this university now. And now that they're moving to Division I, and they've had other successes since then. They've had big-time moments. Obviously, Nicole Hensley plays on the U.S. Olympic team for women's hockey. So they have names out there. And now that they have that established, now they can go Division I and really get onto that big grand scale. And, you know, I'll be perfectly fine having Ohio State come in and beat us 85-3. That's bringing Ohio State to St. Charles. And that money coming in is going to be huge. So maybe the first year they can come in and beat us 85-3. After that, let's keep it rolling as much as we possibly can. So big time, exciting news times here in St. Louis. It's a lot of fun. Hopefully we get baseball here figured out very, very soon. Don't forget Danny Wexelman from MLB Radio, Network Radio will be on with us tomorrow at 4 o'clock to talk about that itself. Plenty of things to go here in the next couple of weeks. We'll be back with you guys as much as we possibly can. We're still figuring some stuff out, but I'm liking the new time slot. I think 7 o'clock is going to work for us going forward. And once baseball season comes in, it's going to be interesting for sure. So you got anything else before we head out tonight, Scott?
That's it for me tonight, man. Good to be back with you. It was good actually to talk a little bit of sports.
It really was, because I've had to stare at a wall and talk to that about sports for the last couple of weeks. Right now, my wall's been yelled at a couple of different times, so sorry about that.
Yeah, I've got to decorate my wall again. It's been kind of bare, so I've got to get some stuff up behind me again. It's been a little while.
Oh, dude, I got so much stuff here the last couple of weeks. I don't have places to put it, and I'm starting to get worried that I'm becoming a hoarder.
Oh, I've got all kinds of stuff. It's just in storage. I got to pull it back out. So we'll make it work. Oh.
We will. Once again, thank you guys for joining us. We appreciate it. Don't forget, come back at 4 o'clock for our interview with Danny Wexelman. Until then, you guys have a great night, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.
Hey, it's you, man, here from Casey. For all your sports news, catch the Toasted Tavern with Scott Tobin and the man called Wags weeknights at 9 p.m. You can follow Toasted Tavern on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's get toasted.